Part 1. Invasion of the Swamps. Chapter 1. The year Kurt Verlander celebrated his 55th birthday, he fulfilled a long-held dream. Ever since his divorce from Mona 15 years earlier, he had intended to leave his apartment in Myriagotan, where so many unpleasant memories were etched into the walls, and move out to the country. Every time he came home in the evening after a stressful and depressing workday, he was reminded that once upon a time he had lived there with a family. Now the furniture stared at him as if accusing him of desertion. He could never reconcile himself to living there until he became so old that he might not be able to look after himself anymore. Although he had not yet reached the age of 60, he reminded himself over and over again of his father's lonely old age, and he knew he had no desire to follow in his footsteps. He needed only to look into the bathroom mirror in the morning when he was shaving to see that he was growing more and more like his father. When he was young, his face had resembled his mother's, but now it seemed as if his father was taking him over, like a runner who has been lagging a long way behind but is slowly catching up the closer he gets to the invisible finishing line. Verlander's worldview was fairly simple. He did not want to become a bitter hermit, growing old in isolation, being visited only by his daughter, and perhaps now and then by a former colleague who had suddenly remembered that Verlander was still alive. He had no religious hopes of there being something in store for him on the other side of the Black River Styx. There would be nothing but the same darkness that he had once emerged from. Until his 50th birthday, he had harbored a vague fear of death, something that had become his own personal mantra, that he would be dead for such a long time. He had seen far too many dead bodies in his life. There was nothing in their expressionless faces to suggest that their souls had been absorbed into some kind of heaven. Like so many other police officers, he had experienced every possible variation of death. Just after his 50th birthday had been celebrated with a party and cake at the police station, marked by a speech full of empty phrases by the former chief of police, Lisa Holgersson, he had bought a new notebook and tried to record his memories of all the dead people he had come across. It had been a macabre exercise, and he had no idea why he had been tempted to pursue it. When he got as far as the 10th suicide, a man in his 40s, a drug addict, with more or less every problem it was possible to imagine, he gave up. The man had hanged himself in the attic of the condemned apartment building where he lived, hanging in such a way that he was guaranteed to break his neck and hence avoid being slowly choked to death. His name was Velin. The pathologist had told Verlander that the man had been successful. He had proved to be a skillful executioner. At that point, Verlander had abandoned his suicide cases and instead stupidly devoted several hours in an attempt to recall the young people or children he had found dead. But he soon gave that up as well. It was too repugnant. Then he felt ashamed of what he had been trying to do and burned the notebook, as if his efforts were both perverted and illegal. In fact, he was basically a cheerful person. It was just that he had allowed another side of his personality to take over. Death had been his constant companion. He had killed people in the line of duty, but after the obligatory investigation, he had never been accused of unnecessary violence. Having killed two people was the cross he had to bear. If he rarely laughed, it was because of what he had been forced to endure. But one day he made a critical decision. He had been out near Lörderup, not far from the house where his father used to live, to talk to a farmer who had been the target of a very nasty robbery. On the way back to Ystad, he noticed an estate agent's sign picturing a little dirt road where there was a house for sale. He reacted automatically, stopped the car, turned round, and found his way to the address. Even before he got out of the car, it was obvious to him that the property was in need of repair. It had originally been a U-shaped building, the bottom half clad in wood. But now one of the wings was missing. Perhaps it had burned down. He walked round the house. It was a day in early autumn. He could still remember seeing a skein of geese migrating south, flying directly above his head. He peered in through the windows and soon established that only the roof badly needed to be fixed.